As we study the Feast of Purim today, turn to the book of Esther if you have your Bibles. The book of Esther. Let me give you just a little bit of background. Jacob and Esau were brothers. The older of the two was Esau. He had the birthright. He sold it to his brother Jacob for a bowl of lentil stew. Ever have lentil stew? It's pretty good, but I wouldn't trade my birthright for it. But he did, because it says in the book of Genesis that he despised his birthright. He did not want it. But ever since then, the descendants of Jacob and Esau, even though they're cousins, they've been butting heads. Because Esau's descendants say, "You stole it." And Jacob's descendants say, "No, we bought it." And that brings us to the main point of the book of Esther and the Feast of Purim. And that is, when we do what's right in the eyes of God and we're faithful to Him, we love Him with all our hearts, God will bless us beyond measure. And if we are disobedient, it's time for some judgment to fall. So the Feast of Esther, the Purim, comes at a time when Israel is being disobedient to God. They have been commanded since the days of Moses to keep every seventh year as the Sabbath year and don't plant any crops. You can go out in the fields and gather from what grows of its own, but you can't plant. You must let the land lie fallow. Did the Jewish people do that? Just go, no, they did not. 70 times they did not keep the Sabbath year as God had commanded. So God sends the Jewish people into the Babylonian captivity for how long? For 70 years. For 70 years. 1 year of captivity for every year they did not let the land rest. It tells us that in 2 Chronicles. And it was Babylon under the reign of King Nebuchadnezzar that took the southern kingdom of Judah captive starting about 606 BC. How long ago was that? Long time ago. Long time ago. Do you remember Daniel chapter 2? In Daniel chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar, that I just mentioned, the one who took the Jewish people captive into Babylon, had a vision of an idolatrous image. Do you remember it? The head of gold represented Babylon. The chest and arms of silver represented Medo-Persia. They were the kingdom that would overthrow Babylon. We come to the book of Esther, Medo-Persia is ruling. Babylon has been destroyed. Do you remember why in Daniel chapter 5? They held a drunken party and used the cups from God's holy temple to praise the pagan gods. And that's when God wrote on the wall, do you remember, Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin, with his own hand? Mene means you've been weighed in the balances, and Tekel, you've been found wanting, and Upharsin, you're done. But more than that, Tekel is 50. No, Mene is 50, Tekel is 1, and Upharsin is a half. It's been exactly 51 and a half years since Babylon destroyed the temple of God and took those goblets that they're now using to praise the pagan gods. And God said, not another day. And that night, Babylon fell to Medo-Persia. And here we come into the story of Esther, except I got to tell you one more thing. When Israel, with the mixed multitude, came out of Egypt, they kept being attacked by Amalek. Everybody remember Amalek? Who's Amalek's grandpa? Esau. So that's why Amalek is attacking the rear guard of Israel, the sick, the elderly, the weak, the children. That's in Exodus chapter 17. So in Deuteronomy 25, God says we're going to blot out the remembrance of Amalek. One of Amalek's descendants is in the story of Esther, and his name is Haman. That's the reason for the noisemakers. God said we're going to blot out the remembrance of Amalek. So when I mention his descent in Haman, you are carrying out God's commandment to blot out the name. And in 1 Samuel chapter 15, King Saul was told to go kill the Amalekites, every man, woman, and child. And did he do it?
No.
That's when Saul lost the right to be king in Israel, and David was anointed to be king. But it's also why the book of Esther takes place, as we're going to find out. So let's start it. You ready? Esther chapter 1, verse 1. Now it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus. Oh, I got to explain some. Ahasuerus isn't a name. If I say Caesar, what does that mean to you? There are all kinds of Caesars. Caesar's a title, like Tsar in Russia. So is Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus just means majesty. His name was Xerxes. X-E-R-X-E-S. Xerxes. That's why it has to say this was the Ahasuerus who ruled over 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia. Because they were all Ahasuerus. So he rules 485 to 464 BC, roughly. He rules over the entire known world. Says verse 2, in those days when King Ahasuerus sat on the throne of his kingdom, which was in Shushan, the citadel. Anybody know where Shushan is? The capital of the Medes and Persians. It's in Elam. It's in Elam, just across the Red Sea. It's right near where they built that nuclear reactor in Iran. The old name for Iran is Persia. So the Medo-Persian Empire, this is Iran. Okay, verse 3. Then in the third year of his reign, he made a feast for all his officials and servants, the powers of Persia and Media, the nobles, and the princes of the provinces being before him. He throws a party that lasts for 6 whole months, to which he invites every important person in the entire Medo-Persian Empire. Why does he do that? Because he's so rich? Yeah, but there's more to it. When I said Israel was taken into the Babylonian captivity, they went in three waves, 606, 597, and 583 BC. God had said the captivity would last 70 years, and it's been 70 years from the first captives entering the land, and the people are still there. So Ahasuerus says, I beat God. God said he would deliver his people, but he can't because I'm too important. I'm too strong. Don't ever do that to God, okay? So for 6 months, he has a drunken feast. Verse 5, and when these days were completed, what do you do after a six-month feast? You make another feast. He made a feast lasting 7 days for all the people who are present in Shushan the citadel, from great to small, in the court of the guard of the king's palace. So 6 months was for all the important people, 7 days feast for everybody. Anybody and everybody got to come and drink and eat. Oh, it was such a wonderful party. Yeah, just wait till God gets all of them. But however, verse 6, there were white and blue linen curtains fastened with rods of fine linen and purple on silver rods and marble pillars. All that's trying to say is, boy, this guy was rich. Well, he rules the entire world. And the couches were of gold and silver on a mosaic pavement of alabaster, turquoise, and white and black marble. And they serve drinks in golden vessels. Look at this. Who's invited? Everybody. And each vessel being different from the other. He was so rich, he could have a different golden vessel for every person, from the least to the greatest in Shushan the citadel. With royal wine in abundance, according to the generosity of the king. In accordance with the law, the drinking was not compulsory. Of course, how many of them do you think turned down free wine? Yeah, okay. For so the king had ordered all the officers of his household that they should do according to each man's pleasure. Queen Vashti, everybody go, ooh, she was really pretty. Queen Vashti also made a feast for the women in the royal palace which belonged to King Ahasuerus. On the seventh day, that is of the second feast, so we're winding up the partying, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, which means he was drunk, he commanded Memuchan, Biztha, Harbona, Bigtha, Abagtha, Zethar, and Carcass, couldn't they name one of them John? Seven eunuchs who served in the presence of King Ahasuerus to bring Queen Vashti before the king wearing her royal crown. And it means that nothing else. These were not moral people. In order to show her beauty to the people and the officials, for she was beautiful to behold. But Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's command. The Jewish sages tell us it wasn't because of modesty, it was because God struck her with leprosy. And she didn't want the people to see that he'd struck her with leprosy. But she refused to come at the king's command brought by his eunuchs. Therefore, the king was furious, and his anger burned within him. That just means he was really mad. Then the king said to the wise men who understood the times, for this was the king's manner toward all who knew law and justice. Am I being too loud? Am I waking the baby? Okay, I'll try and be better. Those closest to him being Karshena, Shethar, Amatha, Tarshish, Maris, Marcena, and Memucan, the seven princes of Persia and Media, who had access to the king's presence and who ranked highest in the kingdom. Oh, and what did they say? The king says, what shall we do to Queen Vashti according to law? Because she did not obey the command of King Ahasuerus brought to her by the eunuchs. And Memucan, that's Haman. Thank you. Answer before the king and the princes. Queen Vashti has not only wronged the king, but also all the princes and all the people who are in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus. For the queen's behavior will become known to all women, so that they will despise their husbands in their eyes. When they report, King Ahasuerus commanded Vashti to be brought in before him, and she did not come. This very day, the noble ladies of Persian Media will say to all the king's officials, he's a little over the top, of course, that they have heard of the behavior of the queen. There will be excessive contempt and wrath. If it pleases the king, let a royal decree go forth from him. Let it be recorded in the laws of the Persians and the Medes, so that it will not be altered. That's an important point that we oftentimes overlook. When the law is written in the law of the Medes and Persians, sealed with the king's ring, it cannot be changed. That's in there because when God issues a decree or a commandment, it cannot ever be changed. Psalm 89, verse 34 says, my covenant I will not break, nor alter the word that has gone out of my mouth. Something that we forget sometimes. But back to the script. Then Vashti shall come no more before King Ahasuerus, and if the king give her royal position to another who is better than she. When the king's decree, which he will make, is proclaimed throughout all his empire, for it is great. All wives will honor their husbands, both great and small. And the reply pleased the king and the princes. And the king did according to the word of Memucan. Then he sent letters to all the king's provinces, to each province in its own script, and to every people in their own language, that each man should be master in his own house and speak in the language of his own people. So Queen Vashti is queen no longer. Everybody go, do, 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 do. Because 3 to 4 years passed between chapter 1 and chapter 2. The king's been busy, forgot about Vashti. Chapter 2, after these things, when the wrath of King Ahasuerus subsided, boy, he was mad a long time, he remembered Vashti, what she had done, and what had been decreed against her. Then the king's servants who attended him said, let beautiful young virgins be sought for the king, and let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather all the beautiful young virgins to Shushan the citadel, into the women's quarters, under the custody of Haggai the king's eunuch, custodian of the women, and that beauty preparations be given them. Then let the young woman who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti. This thing pleased the king, and he did so. Now we must enter another character. In Shushan the citadel, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite. What they assume you know from that, but you may not. Who was the king who was supposed to destroy all the Amalekites and didn't?
Saul.
Mordecai descends from Saul. The king of the Amalekites was named Agag, the one that Saul did not destroy. Haman descends from him. So here we have a clash of heads between the descendant of Saul, who didn't destroy the Amalekites, and the descendant of Agag, the king of the Amalekites. Ooh, okay. The plot thickens. Verse 6, Kish had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captives who had been captured with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. And Mordecai had brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother. The young woman was lovely and beautiful. When her father and mother died, Mordecai took her as his own daughter, meaning he adopted her. So she's no longer just a relative. She's now his own daughter. So it was when the king's command and decree were heard, and when many young women were gathered at Shushan the citadel under the custody of Haggai, that Esther also was taken into the king's palace, into the care of Haggai, the custodian of the women. What you've got to notice in verse 8, see the phrase was taken? They weren't asking for volunteers. They went around and took, as in kidnapped, all the beautiful young ladies to bring them to the king. Verse 9. Now the young woman pleased him, that is Haggai, the eunuch, and she obtained his favor. So he readily gave beauty preparations to her besides her allowance. Then 7 choice maidservants were provided for her from the king's palace, and he moved her and her maidservants to the best place in the house of the women. So by gaining favor of Haggai, she gets the best place in the palace, and she gets these attendants and more beauty products than the other women, which must have been really ugly. I'll tell you why. It's right here in the scripture. Esther had not yet revealed her people or family, for Mordecai had charged her not to reveal it, so nobody at the palace knows that she's Jewish. And every day Mordecai paced in front of the court of the women's quarters to learn of Esther's welfare and what was happening to her. He cares about her. She's his adopted daughter. He doesn't hear anything. He wants to know, is she okay? Yeah, but look at verse 12. Each young woman's turn came to go into King Ahasuerus after she had completed 12 months preparation. So she gets 12 months of beauty treatments before she goes in before the king. According to the regulations of the women, for thus were the days of their preparation, apportioned 6 months with oil of myrrh. What does oil of myrrh smell like? It's beautiful, very beautiful fragrance. And 6 months with perfumes and preparations for beautifying women. Thus prepared, each young woman went to the king, and she was given whatever she desired to take with her from the women's quarters to the king's palace. In the evening she went, and in the morning she returned to the second house of the women, to the cousin of Shaashgaz, the king's eunuch who kept the concubines. She would not go into the king again unless the king delighted in her and called for her by name. So each one of the women would have one night with the king and maybe never, ever again. But she's not free to marry. She's one of the king's concubines. Not a place people would want to live, I don't think, in this day and age. Verse 15. Now when the turn came for Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had given her as his daughter, to go into the king's, to the king, she requested nothing but what Haggai, the king's eunuch, the custodian of the women, advised. And Esther obtained favor in the sight of all who saw her. So Esther was taken to King Ahasuerus into his royal palace in the 10th month, which is the month of Tevet, in the 7th year of his reign. That's how we know how many years have passed. The king loved Esther more than all the other women, and she obtained grace and favor in the sight more than all the virgins. So he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Then the king made a great feast, the feast of Esther, for all his officials and servants. And he proclaimed a holiday in the provinces and gave gifts according to the generosity of a king. That's not what today is. When virgins were gathered together a second time, he's already had every young, beautiful woman in the entire kingdom, and they go out and they search for more. Mordecai sat within the king's gate. Are you learning something about this guy's ego? Now, Esther had not revealed her family and her people, just as Mordecai had charged her. She's now queen of the entire land, and nobody knows she's Jewish. For Esther obeyed the command of Mordecai as when she was brought up by him. In those days, while Mordecai sat within the king's gate, do you know what it means to sit within the gate? That means he's one of the elders. He's judging people. He's put in the position of authority. So he's pretty high up in the government. Two of the king's eunuchs, Bigthan and Teresh, doorkeepers, became furious and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. So the matter became known to Mordecai, that is, Mordecai overhears their plot, who told Queen Esther, and Esther informed the king in Mordecai's name. So she says, hey, Mordecai's telling me that these two guys are going to kill you. How do you think that would sit with a king whose ego was that big? Not good. And when an inquiry was made into the matter, he was a fair man, he executed and then had a trial. It was confirmed. And both were hanged on a gallows. Oh, important point. How many have seen in an old Western somebody hung on the gallows? That's not what this means. You know, we think of being hung on a gallows, having a rope put around your neck and you're dropped and you're dead. To be hung in biblical days was to be impaled. So you're impaled on a sharp stick. Oftentimes, really up high on the wall of the city for everybody to see, so they would go, let's not do what he did. And it was written in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king. Everybody go, do, 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 as time passes. Chapter 3. After these things, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes who were with him. And all the king's servants who were within the king's gate bowed and paid homage to Haman, for so the king had commanded concerning him, but Mordecai would not bow or pay homage. Uh-oh. Haman is promoted all that way up in the kingdom, and everybody bows at his feet except Mordecai. Mordecai descends from who? Saul. And Haman? From King Agag of the Amalekites. Aha. The plot thickens. Then a king's servants who were within the king's gate said to Mordecai, why do you transgress the king's command? Notice they don't record an answer. Now it happened, when they spoke to him daily and he would not listen to them, that they told it to Haman to see whether Mordecai's words would stand. Oh, now we hear what Mordecai said. For Mordecai had told them that he was a Jew. So he said, I'm a Jew and I'm not bowing to any Amalekite. So they run and squeal to who? Haman. Verse 5, when Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow or pay him homage, Haman was filled with wrath. Well, look at verse 6. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had told him of the people of Mordecai. Instead, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews who were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, the people of Mordecai. Stop and think for a moment. What does King Ahasuerus rule over? The entire world. So Haman is now set to destroy every Jewish person in the world. If he was successful, would there have been a Virgin Mary 2,000 years ago to give birth to a Messiah? No. So if Haman had been successful, you and I would be eternally lost. Who do you think is the power behind Haman? Satan. You betcha. Verse 7. In the first month, which is the month of Nisan, that's in our spring, about March to April, it's about a month from now. In the 12th year of King Ahasuerus, so how many years have passed now? About 5 more from when Esther became queen. So in the 12th month of King Ahasuerus, they cast pur, that's the Persian word for a lot, as in a pair of dice. Pur is single, purim, plural. Before Haman, to determine the day and the month until it fell in the 12th month, which is the month of Adar. That's this month. Can you imagine the face of Haman as he says, can I kill him the first month? No. Second month? No. Third month? No. Until they get to the 12th month. And how many months are there in a year? 12. He's got to wait a whole nother year to kill them. Oh, it's horrible for him. Then Haman said to King Ahasuerus, there is a certain people scattered and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from all other peoples, and they do not keep the king's laws. Therefore, it's not fitting for the king to let them remain. If it pleases the king, let a decree be written that they be destroyed. And I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who do the work to bring it into the king's treasuries, of course. Wait a minute. How much is 10,000 talents of silver? It's 375 tons. 375 tons. That's 2/3 of Persia's annual income. How long do you think the king had to think about this? I'm going to be rich. So the king took his signet ring from his hand and gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. And the king said to Haman, the money and the people are given to you to do with them as seems good to you. What did the king give him? His signet ring. What happens when a law is sealed with the king's signet ring? It cannot be changed. Uh-oh. Now, how many of you realize that God didn't have a mean old English teacher that gave him a 1,000-page book to write, right? You know that. So every word here in the scripture is important. And they're now going to give us a bunch of dates. And people tend to read over them because, well, what do they mean anyway? Well, let's see. Verse 12. And the king's scribes were called on the 13th day of the first month. Make a note of that. That's the 13th day of the month of Nisan. And a decree was written according to all that Haman commanded to the king's satraps, to the governors who were over each province, to the officials of all people, to every province according to its script, and every people in their language, in the name of King Ahasuerus, who was written and sealed with the king's signet ring. And the letters were sent by couriers into all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all the Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day, on the 12th day of the 12th month, I'm sorry, the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, which is this month, and to plunder their possessions. What had Saul been commanded by God to destroy the Amalekites, every man, woman, and child?
And their stuff.
And their stuff. So Haman has written a... Thank you. A legal decree that says he gets to do to them what Saul should have done to the Amalekites. Verse 14, a copy of the document was to be issued as law in every province, being published for all people, that they should be ready for that day. The couriers went out, hastened by the king's command, and the decree was proclaimed in Shushan the citadel. So the king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Shushan was perplexed. Mordecai is a Jew. There are many important and influential Jews in Shushan the citadel. They're all looking at each other saying, we're supposed to kill them all. Why? They have no idea. So they're perplexed. Chapter 4. When Mordecai learned all that had happened, he tore his clothes. What does that mean when a Jewish person tears their clothes? Great mourning. M-O-U-R. Not the kind when the sun comes up. And put on sackcloth, that means repentance, and ashes, which is bitter remorse. And went out into the midst of the city. He cried out with a loud and bitter cry. He went as far as the front of the king's gate, for no one might enter the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. So he's gone as far as he can go, to the gate of the palace. He can go no further. And in every province where the king's command decree arrived, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing. And many lay in sackcloth and ashes. Verse 4. So Esther's maids and eunuchs came and told her. Why doesn't she know? The letter wasn't decreed in the palace. Only outside. So she has no idea what's in store. And the queen was deeply distressed. Then she sent garments to clothe Mordecai and take his sackcloth away from him, but he would not accept them. He won't give up his mourning garments. He won't take those nice, beautiful clothes. Then Esther called Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs, whom he had appointed to attend her, and she gave him a command concerning Mordecai to learn what and why this was. So Hathach went out to Mordecai in the city square that was in front of the king's gate. And Mordecai told him all that had happened to him and the sum of money that Haman had promised. Good job. To pay into the king's treasuries to destroy the Jews. It's 8. He also gave him a copy of the written decree for their destruction, which was given at Shushan, that he might show it to Esther and explain it to her. It's not that she's dumb, it's that she's Jewish. And if they're going to destroy all the Jewish people, that includes her. So explain that to her so she understands the gravity of the situation. That he might command her to go into the king to make supplication to him and plead before him for the people. So Hathach returned and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Then Esther spoke to Hathach and gave him a command for Mordecai.
All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that any man or woman who goes into the inner court to the king who has not been called, he has but one law, put all to death, except the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter that he may live. Yet I myself have not been called to go into the king these 30 days.
In other words, what? If I go into the king's presence, he didn't call for me, they're going to put me to death. I can't do it. So they told Mordecai Esther's words. And Mordecai told them to answer Esther, "Do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" In other words, Mordecai steps back and says, maybe this is the reason that God struck Queen Esther, or Queen Vashti, with leprosy, so that she gets deposed and you get to be queen, just so you can intervene on your people's behalf at this moment. You know, one thing I haven't seen in here yet is the name God.
Keep looking, you're not going to find it.
You're not going to find it. The name God is not in this book anywhere. And yet he's all over it. Verse 13, and Mordecai told them to answer Esther, yep, for such a time as this. Verse 15, then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai,
"Go, gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days, day or night. My maids and I will fast likewise, and I will go into the king, which is against the law. And if I perish, I perish."
If it's the 13th of Nisan, and she's going to fast for 3 days, that's the 14th, the 15th, and the 16th. Make a note of that. Verse 17, so Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther commanded him. Now it happened on the third day, so it's the 16th day of the first month of the biblical year, which is about our April, the 16th of Nisan, that Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace across from the king's house, while the king sat on his royal throne in the royal house facing the entrance of the house. So it was when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court that she found favor in his sight. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. Then Esther went near and touched the top of the scepter. And the king said to her, "What do you wish, Queen Esther? What is your request? It shall be given to you up to half the kingdom." Apparently, Okay, never mind. We won't talk about divorce and community property laws. Okay. So Esther answered,
"If it pleases the king, let the king and Haman come today to the banquet that I have prepared for him."
It's just those two, the king and Haman. How do you think that's going to make those two feel? The queen wants us and only us. Then the king said, "Bring Haman quickly, that he may do as Esther has said." So the king and Haman went to the banquet that Esther had prepared. At the banquet of wine, the king said to Esther, "What is your petition? It shall be granted you. What is your request? Up to half the kingdom, it shall be done." Then Esther answered and said,
"My petition and request is this. If I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, then let the king and Haman come to the banquet which I will prepare for them. And tomorrow I will do as the king has said."
If today is the 16th, and her request is that they come tomorrow, what day do they come back? On the 17th. So Haman went out that day joyful and with a glad heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate and that he did not stand or tremble before him, he was filled with indignation against Mordecai. He has just been honored by the queen of the whole world. to come to a banquet of wine today and tomorrow. And all that joy is extinguished because Mordecai won't fall down at his feet. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home. And he sent and called for his friends and his wife, Zeresh. Then Haman told them of his great riches, the multitude of his children, everything in which the king had promoted him, and how he advanced him above the officials and servants of the king. Moreover, Haman said, "Besides, Queen Esther invited no one but me to come in with the king to the banquet that she prepared. And tomorrow I'm again invited by her, along with the king. Yet all this avails me nothing, nothing, nothing. Oh, so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate." Then his wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, "Let a gallows be made 50 cubits high." That's 75 feet. That's a sharpened pole 75 feet high. "And in the morning, request to the king that Mordecai be hanged on it. Then go merrily with the king to the banquet." Nothing just whets the appetite like killing a man in the morning, you know. And the thing pleased Haman. So he had the gallows made. You want to see God involved? Start chapter 6. That night, that very night, the king could not sleep. So one was commanded to bring the book of the records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. Where's it read? Believe it or not, it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs, the doorkeepers, who had sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. What do you know? They just happened to open to this page. What a coincidence. Then the king said, "What honor or dignity has been bestowed on Mordecai for this?" And the king's servants who attended him said, "Nothing has been done for him." You got to understand what this means to the king is, my life was worth nothing. Yeah, I'd be worried about these guys who just said we didn't do anything. Oh my, it's a terrible embarrassment for the king. So the king said, "Who's in the court?" Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace to suggest that the king hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. The king's servant said to him, "Haman is there standing in the court." And the king said, "Let him come in." So Haman came in, and the king asked him, "What shall be done for the man whom the king delights to honor?" Now Haman thought in his heart, "Whom would the king delight to honor more than me?" And Haman answered the king, "For the man whom the king delights to honor, let a royal robe be brought which the king has worn, and a horse on which the king has ridden, with a royal crest placed on his head. Then let this robe and horse be delivered to the hand of the king's most noble of princes. Then he may array the man whom the king delights to honor. Then parade him on horseback through the city square and proclaim before him, 'Thus it shall be done to the man whom the king delights to honor.'" Then the king said to Haman, "Hurry, take the robe and the horse as you suggested and do so for Mordecai the Jew, who sits within the king's gate, and leave nothing undone of all that you have spoken." Everybody picture Haman's face right now. Oh no, that's not what I had in mind. But does he dare rebuke the king? No. So what happens is, verse 12, "And afterward Mordecai went back to the king's gate, but Haman hurried to his house mourning and with his head covered." Now he's the one that's mourning. When Haman told his wife Zeresh and all his friends everything that happened to him, his wise men, his wife Zeresh, said to him, "If Mordecai, before whom you begun to fall, is of Jewish descent, you will not prevail against him, but will surely fall before him." I'm sure this is the origin of the phrase, "With friends like this, who needs enemies?" While they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs came and hastened to bring Haman to the banquet which Esther had prepared. Oh, this is going to make Haman feel so much better. I said Haman. Thank you. Chapter 7. So the king and Haman went to dine with Queen Esther. And on the second day, this is now the 17th of Nisan, at the banquet of wine, the king said to Esther, "What is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Up to half the kingdom, it shall be done." The Queen Esther answered and said, If I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we have been sold, my people and I, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. Had we been sold as male and female slaves, I would have held my tongue, although the enemy can never compensate for the king's loss." Now picture the king's face. So King Ahasuerus answered and said to Queen Esther, "Who is he and where is he who would dare presume in his heart to do such a thing?" You ready for this? And Esther said, "The adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman." What you've got to understand is Satan is not a name, it's a title. Hebrew is Hasatan, means the adversary. She has just described Haman as being Satan himself. Ooh, ooh, ooh. So Haman was terrified before the king and queen. He can see the king's face. The king's no longer beaming with joy and pride. But he's looking at Haman going. Verse 7, and the king arose in his wrath. He's too angry to speak right away. From the banquet of wine and went into the palace garden. But Haman stood before Queen Esther, pleading for his life, for he saw that evil was determined against him by the king. You can say that again. Now, in one of my favorite coincidences, as he's pleading for his life, it says in verse 8, when the king returned from the palace garden to the palace, to the place of the banquet of wine, Haman had fallen across the couch where Queen Esther was. He trips and falls on top of the queen, but that's not what it looks like to the king. And the king's already wanted to kill him. And now what does he say? Then the king said, "Will you also assault the queen while I'm in the house?" As the word left the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. Not the words, but you know that little black hood they put over the head of somebody who's about to die? Uh-huh. Now Harbona, one of the eunuchs, said to the king, "Look, the gallows, 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on the king's behalf, is standing at the house of Haman." What a coincidence. "Hey, guy, hey, king, there's a 75-foot stake out there that's really sharp at the top." Then the king said, "Hang him on it." So they hang Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then the king's wrath subsided. Why did I point out the dates? On what date is Haman hung on his own gallows? The 17th day of Nisan. That's the same day that Noah's ark sat down on Mount Ararat and Noah and his family were delivered from the judgment of God. It's the same day that the children of Israel passed through the Red Sea as they came out of Egypt, being delivered from Pharaoh. and his plot to destroy them. And it's also the day that our Messiah Yeshua arose from the grave. These four great acts of deliverance, Noah's Ark, the Exodus through the Red Sea, Haman being hung on his own gallows, and Yeshua rising from the dead, all take place on the same day. Verse 8, everybody now go, do, 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 as time passes. You got to remember something. The decree went forth to kill all the Jews. It's sealed with the king's signet ring. How do you change it? You can't. Uh-oh. It's impossible, but with God, all things are possible. Verse 8, on that day, King Ahasuerus gave Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told how he was related to her. So the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai. And Esther appointed Mordecai over the house of Haman. Now Esther spoke again to the king, fell down at his feet, and implored him with tears to counteract the evil of Haman, the Agagite, in his scheme which he had devised against the Jews. And the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther. So Esther arose and stood before the king and said, "If it pleases the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and the thing seems right to the king, and I am pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, which he wrote to annihilate the Jews who are in all the king's provinces. For how can I endure to see the evil that will come to my people? Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my countrymen?" Then King Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther and Mordecai the Jew, "Indeed, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and they have hanged him on the gallows because he tried to lay his hand on the Jews. You yourselves write a decree concerning the Jews as you please, in the king's name, and seal it with the king's signet ring. For whatever is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's signet ring, no one can revoke." Verse 8 means a little more than it seems to say. He says, "I don't have a clue what to do. Here, you take the ring. You figure it out. Because you can't revoke the earlier decree." Verse 9, so the king's scribes were called at that time in the third month, which is the month of Sivan. That's about when Passover 50 days after that comes Pentecost. That's in Sivan. On the 23rd day, and it was written according to all that Mordecai commanded to the Jews, the satraps, the governors, and the princes of the provinces from India to Ethiopia, 127 provinces in all, to every province in its own script, to every people in their own language, and to the Jews in their own script and language. And he wrote in the name of King Ahasuerus, sealed it with the king's signet ring, and sent letters by couriers on horseback, riding on royal horses bred from swift steeds. By these letters, the king permitted the Jews who were in every city to gather together and protect their lives. No offensive action, but you can defend yourself. To destroy, kill, and annihilate all the forces of any people or province that would assault them, both little children and women, and to plunder their possessions. So the letter doesn't stop the others from attacking the Jews, but allows the Jews to defend themselves, which otherwise they could not have done. Verse 12, on one day in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, in the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, which is this month, a copy of the document was to be issued for a decree in every province and published for all people, so that the Jews would be ready on that day to avenge themselves on their enemies. The couriers who rode on royal horses went out, hastened, and pressed on by the king's command, and the decree was issued in Shushan, the citadel. So Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel in blue and white, with a great crown of gold and a garment of fine linen and purple, and the city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad. The Jews had light and gladness, joy and honor. And in every province and city, wherever the king's command decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a holiday. And look at the next verse. Then many of the people of the land became Jews, because fear of the Jews fell upon them. In other words, they don't want to be part of the attacking forces. They want to join the Jewish people. And they get grafted in like wild olive trees being grafted into a cultivated tree. Chapter 9, verse 1. Now in the 12th month, that is the month of Adar, on the 13th day, the time came for the king's command and his decree to be executed. On the day that the enemies of the Jews had hoped to overpower them, the opposite occurred, in that the Jews themselves overpowered those who hated them. The Jews gathered together in their cities throughout all the provinces of King Ahasuerus to lay hands on those who sought their harm, and no one could withstand them because fear of them fell upon all people. Does anybody see God in the story yet? And all the officials of the provinces, the satraps, the governors, and all those doing the king's work helped the Jews because the fear of Mordecai fell upon them. For Mordecai was great in the king's palace, and his fame spread throughout all the provinces. For this man, Mordecai, became increasingly prominent. Then the Jews defeated all their enemies with the stroke of the sword, with slaughter and destruction, and did what they pleased with those who hated them. Now I want you to pay close attention to verses 6 through 10. And in Shushan, the citadel, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men. Also Parshan Datha, Dalphon, Aspatha, Paratha, Adalia, Aradatha, Parmashta, Arasai, Aradai, and Vejazatha, the 10 sons of Haman, the son of Hamadatha, the enemy of the Jews, they killed, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. So they didn't harm anybody who were not trying to kill them, and they did not take any of the money, none of the plunder. But the reason I want you to look at those verses 6 through 10 is if you're looking at a Torah scroll, there are three letters that are smaller than all the others. And in the word Parshandatha in verse 7, it's a Tav. The TH at the NTHA, underline that. That's smaller than the rest of the letters. In verse 9, the SH in Parmashta, that's a sheen. That's smaller. And in that same verse, verse 9, the Z in Vajazatha is smaller. Those three letters bring us up to a biblical year. And that's the year 5707, which in our calendar is 1946. And what happened on Tishri 21 in the year 1946? There were 11 Nazis that were to be hung, but Hermann Göring took cyanide and died, which left 10 Nazis that were hung on that day, Tishri 1, in the year 1946. Just a coincidence? Yeah, probably not. Especially as we read on. Verse 11, on that day, the number of those who were killed in Shushan the citadel was brought to the king. And the king said to Queen Esther, the Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men in Shushan the citadel, and the 10 sons of Haman. What have they done in the rest of the king's provinces? Now what is your petition? It shall be granted to you. Or what is your further request? It shall be done. And then Esther said, if it pleases the king, let it be granted to the Jews who are in Shushan to do again tomorrow, according to today's decree, and let Haman's 10 sons be hanged on the gallows. I want you to notice that those 10 sons are dead. So the next day, they're to be hung on the gallows. In the midst of the story where the 10 Nazi war criminals who tried under Hitler to exterminate the Jewish people were also hung. Just a coincidence, I'm sure. Verse 14. So the king commanded this to be done. The decree was issued in Shushan, And they hanged Haman's 10 sons. And the Jews who were in Shushan gathered together again on the 14th day of the month of Adar and killed 300 men at Shushan, but did not lay a hand on the plunder. So there were 300 men who attacked them the next day, and again they defended themselves. The remainder of the Jews in the king's provinces gathered together and protected their lives, had rest from their enemies, and killed 75,000 of their enemies, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. This was on the 14th day of the month of Adar, and on the 14th of the month they rested and made it a day of feasting and gladness. But the Jews who were at Shushan assembled together on the 13th day, as well as on the 14th, and on the 15th of the month they rested and made it a day of feasting and gladness. Therefore the Jews of the villages who dwelt in the unwalled towns celebrated the 14th day of the month of Adar with gladness and feasting as a holiday and for sending presents to one another. And Mordecai wrote these things and sent letters to all the Jews near and far who were in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus to establish among them that they should celebrate yearly the 14th and 15th days of the month of Adar. We call that celebration Purim. As the days in which the Jews had rest from their enemies, as the month which was turned from sorrow to joy for them, and from mourning to a holiday. And they should make them days of feasting and joy, of sending presents to one another and gifts to the poor. So the Jews accepted the custom which they had begun, as Mordecai had written to them, because Haman, the son of Hammedatha the Agagite, the enemy of all the Jews, had plotted against the Jews to annihilate them, and had cast Pur, that is the lot, to consume them and destroy them. But when Esther came before the king, he commanded by letter that this wicked plot which Haman had devised against the Jews should return on his own head, and that he and his sons should be hanged on the gallows. So they call these days Purim, after the name Pur. Therefore, because of all the words of this letter, what they had seen concerning this matter, what had happened to them, the Jews established and imposed it upon themselves and their descendants and all who would join them, meaning Jew and Gentile alike. Anyone who rejoices in the fact that the Jewish people survived so that Mary 2,000 years ago could give birth to a little baby named Yeshua, who would grow up to die on Calvary's tree, to be our Messiah, to be our Savior, our friend, who was buried but on the third day was raised again to new life. That without fail they should celebrate these 2 days every year according to the written instructions and according to the prescribed time. Which is why Purim is always held on the days it says in the scripture, because that's what the Bible says. That these days should be remembered. The Hebrew word remembered means to be retold from generation to generation so that it's never forgotten. Every family, every province, and every city, that these days of Purim should not fail to be observed among the Jews, that the memory of them should not perish among their descendants. Then Queen Esther, the daughter of Abigail, with Mordecai the Jew, wrote with full authority to confirm the second letter about Purim. And Mordecai sent letters to all the Jews in the 127 provinces of the kingdom of Ahasuerus with words of peace and truth to confirm these days of Purim at their appointed time, as Mordecai the Jew and Queen Esther had prescribed for them, and as they had decreed for themselves and their descendants concerning matters of their fasting and lamenting. So the decree of Esther confirmed these matters of Purim, and it was written in the book. What book? You're reading it. Chapter 10. And King Ahasuerus imposed tribute on the land and on the islands of the sea. And all the acts of his power and his might and the account of his greatness of Mordecai, to which the king advanced him, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Media and Persia? The answer is, I don't know. Never read the book. But I assume so. For Mordecai the Jew was second to King Ahasuerus and was great among the Jews and well received by the multitude of his brethren, seeking the good of his people and speaking peace to all his countrymen. That ends the book. So we say what? Chazak, chazak, v'nish chazek. Be strong, and may we be strengthened. But it's not the end of the story. Remember, the children of Israel went into captivity in three waves. Each one of those three waves of captivity had to spend 70 years. It has not been 70 years since the third group came into captivity. So Queen Esther and King Ahasuerus have a son. He's known in history as Artaxerxes Longinus. Artaxerxes means the son of Xerxes. His name, we would say, is Darius. But he was the king that gives the decree that Daniel refers to in Daniel chapter 9, verses 24 to 27, that let the children of Israel go back to Israel and rebuild Jerusalem. Being the son of a Jewish mother, that makes him Jewish. And he's the one who said, "Let my people go home." The book of Esther was the last book to be admitted into the Jewish canon, because it doesn't contain the name of God. But the Jewish sages said, the name of God may not be in the book, but God's fingerprints are all over it. And how many of you heard of the Dead Sea Scrolls? Dead Sea Scrolls contain a copy of every book of the Old Testament except Esther. Because the Dead Sea Scrolls were found in what's called a Geniza. G-E-N-I-Z-A, a Geniza. When you copy a book of the Bible, as the scribes would do, if they make a mistake, any mistake at all, no matter how small, if the book contains the name of God, you must have a funeral and bury it. The book of Esther doesn't contain the name of God. So if you make a mistake, you rip it up and start over. And that's why they found every book of the Old Testament except for Esther. They all contain a boo-boo. And that's enough about scribals and all that, the way that works. Let me just say this. If Haman had succeeded, there would have been no salvation for the world. But the book of Esther actually happened. It's a true story, but there's a deeper level to it. Remember when the Apostle Paul said in 1 Corinthians 15, verses 50 and 51, "I tell you a mystery"? That word mystery, don't go look in the English dictionary. Don't go look in a Greek dictionary. Go to the Hebrew dictionary. There are four levels of Hebrew hermeneutics: Peshat, Remez, Darash, and Sod. Peshat's the literal. Remez is like verses on the same topic. Darash is a homily or a sermon. The Sod is the mystery level, the deeper meaning that you don't necessarily see when you read the script itself. And the book of Esther is a big picture. King Ahasuerus, represents God, whose word cannot be changed. Vashti represents the people who said they were faithful to God, but they were not, and were cast away. Esther, whose real name is Hadassah, Hadassah means myrtle, is a picture of the believer, and Mordecai pictures Messiah. And if you go through and read through it, it's about how God called a people to himself at Mount Sinai, and they rebelled against him. And he sent them into captivity, sent his only begotten son to bring out a new people that were, shall we say, people of faith, whether they were born Jewish or non-Jewish, just as this book is for Jews and non-Jews, who had faith in God and believed his word that he sent his only begotten son to suffer and die for us, who was buried and resurrected to be our Messiah, our Savior, and our friend. And in chapter 9, did you notice he kept saying, "in that day," and in chapter 8, "in that day, in that day, in that day"? That pictures the millennial kingdom. And it, a lot of neat pictures in there, but we don't have time to go over all that. Look at the time. I'm late. So let's close in prayer.